So after listening to that song, today with us we have Dr. Stefano Gualeni from the Institute of Digital Games at the University of Malta. First of all, thank you for accepting our invitation to come again on Radio Mocha.
Thank you for having me again.
My pleasure. So for the listeners who are at home listening to this program, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm generally an individual who originally came from Italy to contribute to an institute which focuses on digital games and digital culture here in Malta. I am an architect. I used to make video games for entertainment purposes, as in working for the games industry. And then I was so unlucky that I got a PhD in philosophy and my life started to go downhill from there, as you can imagine.
And why do you think this is so?
Oh no, I was being sarcastic.
Oh, of course. Yes, you should have put up the sarcasm sign, you know, like Big Bang Theory. Sheldon is sarcasm is lost on him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, really? You've never watched the Big Bang Theory?
No, I know better.
Okay, fair enough. it's quite nice. Anyway, so let's move on. You just recently took part in something soup something.
That's right.
For our listeners at home, what is that?
As perhaps is sort of clear to the listeners at this point, I am both a game designer and somebody who studies philosophy, besides being a very annoying person, as you just noticed. These sort of two, aspects of my life come together when I try to pursue philosophical research done through, let's say, computers, but more specifically, through the, say, technologies, conventions, and practices connected to game design. More like simply speaking, I try to do philosophy with virtual worlds, right? Mm-hmm. So you asked about this something something soup something, which is one of those things. Like we created at the Institute and with the help of Malco Lotteries, who contributed to our research, a little team that developed a sort of philosophical thing, which you can call a game if you feel so inclined. The title is something something soup something because it's about, well, soup. But yeah, secretly is about philosophy of language, but yeah.
Yeah, it's disguised as soup. Right?
Disguised as a reflection on soup, yes.
Fair enough. So, okay, you mentioned a very important word, a game. What is a game?
Oh, this is quite a fantastic question, but I don't feel very prepared to answer it, which is a bit of a paradox, isn't it? Think about it. This person is a game designer who works in a games institute and doesn't know what games are. Isn't that funny? Quite miserable. And also is something that is perhaps something that we have in common with maybe literature or art or perhaps even science. If I ask you to define what literature is, I mean, we are in front of something that is quite complex. It's not a notion that refers to a single object, right? But it's something that an Austrian philosopher called Ludwig Wittgenstein would call an entity which indicates a family of objects, a family of things, a family of concepts, a family of notions, right? So when we say literature, we indicate a bunch of different things that are, in a way, weaved together by some similarities, but that maybe don't even have a single feature connecting all of the cases that we indicate as literature, right? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Think the same about the world of art, right? We call art a number of things. However, many things that we call art have nothing in common with one another, right? So this is essentially the notion of family resemblances, right? And so we have notions that do not indicate single concepts, but rather a family of concepts that have some degree of similarity with one another.
So it's a loose kind of definition, or let's say a fluid definition of a game.
Well, I mean, game in particular, as you just mentioned, was the example that was brought up precisely by this philosopher, Wittgenstein, to indicate that, well, we use this word every day in a number of different contexts. Video games are games, sports are sometimes referred to as games. Game of Thrones, like a famous TV show, has this word in. Although many of those notion, concepts, entity, or ideas that we have about games have very loose connections to one another. And yet, we can use this term meaningfully, and we can understand each other in culture when we talk about that. So when you ask me about what a game is, I can quite frankly tell you that I don't know. I use the word. I think I know what it refers to. And I'm quite well aware of the fluidity and the vagueness of this concept.
What does it mean to you?
I tend to like games that are sort of logic-based and competitive in nature, so I tend to have a sort of ludological stance to game. That's a very bad word that we use in academia for games, meaning that I favor games that tend to have sort of preset objectives and sort of ways to quantify players' performance. So in a way, games in which I can compete on skills or thinking capability against somebody else, like, for example, say, fighting games or card games or sports, maybe even. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan, strictly speaking, of games that do not have those kind of things, but certainly I find them very academically interesting. Personally, I mean, you ask me my personal taste, right?
Yeah.
So I prefer to play those games, but I embrace all of them as very interesting and very relevant cultural phenomena.
Fair enough. So let's go back to something, soup something.
Right.
Why were you inspired to create such a game, and what was the purpose behind it?
Well, half of the answer I have already given it to you,
yeah.
Right? Because I made a game which is very fluid in itself, and it's very hard to figure out whether you're actually playing or whether that what you're playing is a game. But why soup? As in, could have I made a game about game, and would have that worked out? Well, in the way that I try to operate, I try to use a very simple concept, a familiar concept like game, but maybe something even more like mundane and practical, like soup. If you think about it, soup is another one of those things that do not indicate one single concept, depending on historical period, culture, your preference, how your mother used to raise you, and so on and so forth, or your interest in philosophy of language, you might have a very different conception of what soup is. For example, is frozen soup soup? I mean, is liquidity one of the common traits for soup? What does it contain? Can a milk base be a good base for soup? If you're Polish, probably think naturally that's the case. But maybe for a Maltese person, that's more like breakfast or certainly not soup. In many countries, they have very thick soup. Some countries have very foamy soups. Some mm-hmm. countries serve cold soups, like gazpacho, for example. Does the presence of one non-edible ingredient make it non-soup?
Mm-hmm.
So if I put a little umbrella, you know, like a cocktail umbrella kind of thing, in your soup, does it stop being a soup, or is it just soup with an ornamentation on it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think it's an interesting concept that sort of I try to trigger the players into facing, tackling, and trying to answer by means of game technologies, right? So in a way, this little experience should reveal to the players interactively that they don't have quite a clear idea of where the boundaries of this concept of soup is. And at the end of the game, the system of the game presents the players with their, mm-hmm. Final synthetic definition of what a soup is based on their decision and behaviors within the game.
I guess the first thing that they realize, I've played the game, right? First time that I realized.
Thank you for that. Among the three people.
Not three people, seriously. No. It's been an interesting playing this game, because I think the first thing that I actually realized is something which you have just said, that I thought I knew what the soup is, or at least I had this definition in my mind. But when I started playing the game, and you know, these things started being introduced to the game, I'm like, can this, you know, does it make it a soup now, or it's not a soup anymore? So it did bring up this kind of thinking that I think that's the point of it, I guess, to kind of, first of all, kind of make a point of you don't actually know what soup is.
Mm.
So I think that would be the first thing that I had
In a similar way in which we don't know what art is exactly, despite the fact that you have like a sort of a notion, internal sort of representation that, I mean, you have the idea of what art is, but it's very hard to communicate. And Ludwig Wittgenstein would call this like a nominal definition. So instead of looking for a very precise, comprehensive, ironclad definition that is almost quasi-scientific for what soup is, we can be content with and having a loose understanding that is socially contextual about what soup is. And I think the game is very much about that. Mm-hmm. When, at the end, the game presents you with a definition of what your efforts amounted to, you're also confronted with the fact that this definition might be incomplete, dissatisfactory, maybe not covering something that you internally feel should be soup, and so on. So there's a number of moments, at least two in the game, in which that is reminded to the player and showed to the player. I don't know if, for example, people listening to this conversation can have already a similar experience as in, like, I got them to think a bit harder about what soup is. Does it matter what it's served into or what tools we give you with soup in terms of you understanding what soup is? But I think that there's a merit in using digital media because many of these kind of little experiments, which in philosophy we call thought experiments, can be tried out and can be in a way experienced in first person without going through lengthy conversation or quoting Austrian philosophers and so on and so forth. Yeah?
So let's talk about now restrictions in designing such a game. What were they?
What do you know about game design?
Nothing.
Okay, but imagine that if this game were similar to a building, because of course I'm an architect, and also Wittgenstein loved architecture, by the way, so there's more than one connection. I'm an architect, right? And when you build a house, what are the restrictions that are available to you? I mean, what would you qualify as the restrictions?
Okay, so basically you need to see the plot, how big it is.
Right.
You need to see whether there are any restrictions with to how to build the plot, so the facade.
That's right.
What style you want it in.
Right. So there are some sort of social regulation,
yeah,
right? Then
exactly.
There's your personal taste.
Exactly.
Then there's the amount of money that you have.
Exactly.
The house needs to stand, so it needs to be structurally sound. It needs to protect you from rain, hopefully, depending on what your preferences are. We don't really know what a house is. We could go. And similarly, like in developing a video game, you need to have some sort of technical limitation that make the game, I don't know, stable and small enough to be shared, for example. But there's also technical limitations in terms of, say, how much money do I have to make this thing? How much does an artist cost? How long can I do research about the kind of categories that might create soup in the mind of a sort of like Western world person versus I come up with these categories? I mean, there's a number of things that featured in. One additional thing is that time is also an issue here. Like, for example, if you are building a house, probably you're interested in stopping rent wherever you're living and moving into the house as quickly as possible. And we had a deadline for the game that needed to be out before the end of June for a number of reasons. And we managed to hit that as well. So I would say, in sum, that the main restrictions were technical, economical, and time-related. As far as me coming up with the idea and writing the game, that's all done as part of my sort of job, also my leisure time, and so that didn't have many restrictions. But in the process of coming up with the idea, the more experience you get, the more you start to take all these things into account to ensure that this is not going to fail and that this is feasible and people working with you will have an easy time as opposed to coming up with solutions themselves.
Of course. So let's talk a bit about the background of the game, right? What is the purpose of having such a background? I remember there was
What do you mean by background?
Okay, so there was a bulky piece of machinery. Just an example. Why did you choose that kind of setting? Me curious. Huh?
I think I'm gonna start drinking some water now and try to look somewhere else until you change the question.
So it was all random, basically.
No, okay, there's many reasons, but then again, like, I don't think this is very relevant to the philosophical point.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just aesthetics?
No, it also connects with the sort of small history, I mean, small narrative of the game, and it has to do with the fact that it also tries to bring up a Marxist point, but let's keep that. Right? Yeah, let's maybe focus on the linguistic part of it. I think it's a nice question, and it's in a sense that one interesting thing about the background is the fact that I designed it as an architect does, right? So I started with sort of space and functional needs and then tried to construct a narrative on top of it. So there's a bunch of reasons why things are that way. There's also a bunch of reasons why, for example, a part of the game quantifies your performance. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. There's a little part in the game for the people who didn't play it, meaning all of my of the people listening.
We can place this online and they are...
Oh, you put in a link online.
Yes.
The game is free and takes you about 5 minutes. So if you're interested, if you want to show your child something kind of cool that is sort of... I mean, that education and sort of interesting thoughts and ideas can also come by in the form of games, and games are not all about mindless shooting, aligning pieces of fruit and all candies and so on and so forth, then you can show it to your children. So back to the original point, I was bringing up the idea that there's a part of the game in which the player needs to fulfill a task, mm-hmm. and the task will be quantified in terms of their performance. But there are other parts of the games that are just purely foreseen, other parts of the game which remain ambiguous in terms of interaction. So the game doesn't tell you, oh, this interaction was awesome versus this interaction was not correct. So in putting all these elements together like ingredients of soup, I also try to raise the idea of whether what they played was actually a game or rather something different, and what constitutes a game similarly to what constitutes a dish of soup.
Let's go for a short musical intermission. And because we're talking about words, let's hear a song of words by Hawk Nelson. So after listening to that song, we are talking here with Dr. Stefano Gualeni from the Institute of Digital Games. And we are talking about the game Something Something Soup Something. So am I right in saying that it is a thought experiment?
Yes, I think that is actually a very acute observation. Thought experiments are philosophical tools that request a certain, let's say, person receiving the thought experiment to imagine a situation which is normally very far-fetched and weird and absurd and very ambiguous normally, and to try to think the situation through and to perhaps find solution or answers to the question that is normally posed at the end of the thought experiment. Mm-hmm. So this game does something quite similar, right, as you noticed. So instead of asking a question linguistically or proposing you a piece of text to ponder upon, it's disclosing, if you will, like an experiential situation in which you can also manipulate things, change things, have an interaction, try to answer within the system of the game, right? So technically speaking, yes, it's a thought experiment, only it's not rendered with language, which is where the interesting part of my work is, I believe. What I mean to say here is that traditionally, philosophy has been discussed, developed, and thought as a linguistic discipline, more specifically as a textual discipline, right? You have studied a bit of philosophy in mm-hmm. your Maltese education. You told me from sixth form onwards,
exactly.
Right? And if you think about it, everything that you have studied about philosophy in that period, and maybe even later at the university, was ultimately the history of written thought, or an elaboration of written thought done in a written form. Mm-hmm. So all there is to philosophy, apart from some, of course, oral form that's still gone, such as some seminars, debates, and so on and so forth, takes place in a textual manner. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to do in my overall work in philosophy and game design is trying to use these technologies and these conventions, this new language, if you will, as a way to sort of enrich the horizon of philosophy. So can we do philosophy with medias that are other than text? Mm. Media that, for example, disclose interaction or experiences that are aesthetic and multimedia, for example, rather than focusing on that one single technology which we call language and text.
So it's basically how philosophy has evolved.
I wouldn't call it an evolution because it implies that it's getting better.
Oh, fair enough.
But let's say like an enrichment or the enlargement of its field of possibilities, I would say.
So we basically have moved on, right? So before it was oral, then it was text, and then it was different forms of media.
Well, if you accept that we are doing philosophy while playing and interacting with these situations, and it's becoming a more and more common thing to explain. Say, for example, science dissemination is happening more and more commonly in the form of interactive experiences, mm-hmm. whether you call them games or not. There are websites dedicated to explanation of, say, math, physics, or even philosophy, that rely on interaction and on the possibility of computers to experientially reveal a world or a situation to you. So in that sense, I think that what these machines are particularly good at, which is, again, interaction, memory, representation, and a bunch of other things, can be all put in the service of a new way of doing philosophy, or a philosophy that can enrich our tradition and work in combination with text and, well, the oral tradition. Just one little note, what I'm trying to say here is that I'm not saying that computers are here, finally we have the ultimate cultural or communication or even philosophical medium, but rather it's a tool that, with its limitation, is enriching and enlarging the possibility of thinking and interacting and presenting ideas to one another. So possibly that might lead to a very interesting
enrichment, as you said.
So we've already said that it's a tool, but for the listeners at home who have never played this game, and I suggest you do because it's, well, short and very interesting, the people who are playing the game are required to choose the ingredients of the soup, right?
Or rather to assess whether something presented to you composed of many ingredients can be served as a soup to human beings.
And there were some very weird ingredients.
That's right.
Why?
Okay, so I told you already that this thought experiment that is made into a video game was inspired in more than one way by the work of this Austrian philosopher, Ludwig Wittgenstein. you're learning that name, or no, maybe you did you read Wittgenstein before?
We did it at university, about the educational side.
Ah, right. Because I saw Danielle rolling her eyes.
No, I actually loved learning about language games.
So we had done about Wittgenstein and the language games, and the topic really intrigued me because, you know, a word can actually mean a lot of different things to different people. So what might mean one thing to me might mean something else to another person.
And it's also fascinating to think about something that is apparently so simple is actually so baffling, right?
Exactly.
So soup, you eat it every day, you think you know what it is, but confronted with going down to the nitty-gritty of it, you don't know what soup is.
And then you end up with, like, okay, I don't know anything. So, anyway.
But let's go back to the ingredients. Yeah. So, Wittgenstein's theories are also used in linguistics in something that is called prototype theory. So, before we even started making the game, we had to sort of research what the world, or as many people as possible from as many different backgrounds and nationalities and cultures as possible, thought participated in soup in terms of categories, right? And so we started, like, thanks to also Jonathan, who hopefully will listen to this podcast at a certain point, we did some linguistic research in five different nations before coming up with a game to figure out what categories could be sort of the basis on which we create those bizarre soups. In case you don't know, the soups are created like procedurally, so the computer comes up with soups that are new all the time. Yeah. And inedibility, as well as edibility, were some of the categories that emerged from this research. Took a few months. And so when we need to have inedible components, of course we need to try to clarify that to the players who see like a soup for a few seconds, in a very, very sort of glaring, evident way. And so sometimes, like when there are inedible components, you will sort of be very, very clear about this soup is really bizarre. This can be like, I don't know, a piece of wood or a battery or a bunch of stones. That's how.
Because you will think, is this supposed to be here in this soup? But what about inedible soups? Like you have flies and stuff.
Well, for example, that's a very good point. But then again, like I would have to ask you what you mean by soup to begin with.
Exactly. So yeah, we go back to the... Let's
move away like people call also primordial soup, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, so I don't know, are you talking about that?
Well,
cappuccino and coffee can also be soups.
Exactly, but to me, it's something... Okay, so I would not have considered coffee or tea to be a soup.
Is poison a soup? Vegetable-based poison?
Yes.
So then you have it. Maybe an inedible soup can have a function.
There you go.
You can use it to poison you.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But that was it for coffee. I did not think it was a soup. for at least
then
I realized.
If you take a large enough definition, then figure out the coffee.
Yeah, exactly, because for me, yes, of course, exactly. But that's what I realized at the end of the game. I'm like, yes, actually coffee and tea could be a soup. Why? Because they're liquid, you can drink it.
You normally served in a cup or with
exactly,
a spoon. And those kind
exactly,
of
so those are things which you would consider having when, you know, drinking or eating or whatever you want to call it, a soup. So it's quite varied, and I think the context varies along with it.
Right. If the game got you to think that, I consider myself to have been successful for at least one person.
Well, I've made your day, I hope. But let's move on to the end of the game. Okay, so I played the game, and there was this quote from Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, which said, "For it is the mark of an educated man to look for precision in each class of things, just so far as the nature of the subject admits." What can you tell me about that?
That is a little note stuck to a fridge, so you can take it with a grain of salt.
But okay.
Ultimately, it's sending the same message as the game, right? We can use the word soup, even if we do not go every day into the fine, minute, analytical detail of what that word indicates. And this was also like part of the Wittgenstein language games in theory, right? According to which some words and some groups of things are impossible to be defined analytically, and perhaps we should be happy with a nominal definition, with a definition that just refers to the contextual cultural use of a thing. Right. So, for example, when we say politics, right, probably this word meant something entirely different in ancient Greek than in ancient Greece, rather than compared to what it means now, right?
Or even from country to country.
Absolutely. Like in Italy, the concept is very, very loose and flexible, right, as we figured out. So what I'm trying to say here is that the quote of Aristotle just points out the same thing once again, that there are certain words that, due to their complexity and social interconnection, intricacy or ambiguity, shall probably be left alone and reassured by the fact that we can use them in society and we are understanding what we say in precisely because we belong to that context. And what determines the meaning of a word is not some metaphysical, absurd or abstract or always true referent to that word, but rather its contextual social use. And ultimately what Aristotle is saying, what the game is saying, and what Wittgenstein is saying all at the same time in a way is that we shall be content with that. And that's it.
To end on that note, can you tell us where people can access the game?
Right, and also children can use it because it doesn't contain foul language and can be like something that you can use in class.
Exactly, good for all ages, basically.
Right, so some friends of mine are using it in class to teach sort of Wittgenstein at high school and just showing it. And so where you can find it, you just need to Google something, something, soup, something, and the website will be available to you. I think that the precise address will be posted together with this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I could say it now, but it's pretty pointless. And let me tell you once again, it is free. And if you feel like letting us know what you think, please use language.
And after that, we are going to listen to another song. This time, They Might Be Giants by Unpronounceable.